Dindindi jinjinwa cha jomba yandamba zombe sanje rikwa da shabso tenba tewa Jigdindinba jibu ndube kalu jurwa lana meba lada menam jitumba sanje Pejawa shaja duba la chanze alo chudu kemso cheo Dishi shiva dhajumba yandaba dhombe sanje erikwa dhashabso tenpa tewa Jikdin jimba jibu dhube kalu juwa lana meba lada aminamje tenpa sanje chum Pejawa shaja dhuba la chanze lo chudu kemso cheo tenpa chumden de dishi shiva dhajumba yandaba Sobe Sanje Rigpa Dan Shabso Tenpa Tewara Shepa Jigden Kenpa Jibu Kalo Yurwa Lana Meba Lada Menamge Tumpa Sanje Chumdende Pejawa Chaze Lo Chudo Jabso Che Oye Chizun Jambi Yangla Chaze Lo Kangi Lodzhu Timni Tinti Nyenda Namda Rabze Chini Dungu Chishin Sishin Niji Tuga Lekbama Zin Kanda Sibi Tsuda Ama Mindomu Dunye Gize Ve Chozo Kunla Puji Tarze Yenla Atuju Yanden Chudara chedro nyomo nilong lege chabdo otruze chen Mare meze tonye nyogu chenye chunze rete nam Tene daje saju tazu yendun lunzo gyase tuwe ko Chudra chuda chunye kende talu meze Jambi yala du omo arabazana omo arabazana omo arabazana de omo arabazana de 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 Kera vese ye dalu temo mimba rabse me Kada tenju shunglu toba ye lodru pobe Tsedo se Chuji medo tama rira lingshe nyende kemba de Sanje shenlo mide mbuwa ye Drogun namda shen chubarai shoy Tamba ke namange chugu kala kenze tende ne Chedara zambe duja zimba la Sabje chuge chaba abdo se Mendala gana yata yame Soji chona la chanchu padu tani kyapsu che Tagi chushi jibe sunamange Drola penje sanje adu barai sho Chudan soji chona la chanchu padu tani kyapsu che Tagi chushi jibe sunamange Drola penje sanje adu barai sho Chudan soji chonamala chanju padu tani kyasu che Tagi chushi gibi sunama ji drola sanjin drubarai cho Lada lami medami anji umboda gyajin laso chuji chola chawa cheba nama Sanji sumba rabdu shishin tewe gyugyuba deda shiji tambi chunyi shini dijin shi Namo la ye jia dan lu dan nu jin jie du bong dan dan mi ye jian nam dan zhe wa gun jie chang nam qi zang ba tam jie jie du ta ge qu dun du shi. So how was your week? We haven't met last week. So, were there any opportunities that you were able to apply? Please, anybody, if anybody wants to share. We need somebody to start. Yes, please.
Two things. I'm discovering almost constantly, every day, I find opportunities to practice patience or being aware of self-cherishing and so on, and in my interaction with people, having my inheritance in this culture is being one of, when you're a white male, you prefer, you find out that you have some sort of superiority, and when you're a certain context, I mean, like, business kind of situations or other kinds of things, when I was teaching, you just naturally assume that you're in charge. So more and more I noticed that, even though I'm retired, that continues. And there's people in conversation, and I want to say something, I just practice being patient and waiting instead of just talking over everybody. It's interesting how it's just a very common for me. It's something that I think, well, I have something important to say here, and I'm not getting anything in. I'm thinking, I've heard that complaint from a lot of different kinds of people. That's their daily experience. I'll just wait. It can't be that important. And the second thing is, right now, I was offered this nice chair to sit in. I thought, oh, okay, I'll sit in the chair. And I realized it's a rocking chair. I'm determined to not sit here. I could unconsciously, I'm not mindful, I could be just doing this all night and stop doing that. Kind of sit still.
Yeah, so that would be your mindfulness practice for today.
Yeah, I'm often reminded by my very supportive wife, little habits that I have that she finds really distracting, and that realistically, for example, the one that if I'm even when I was teaching, if I had keys or change or something in my pocket, I would be jingling it around, talking away, and and jingling the stuff. And she said, that's really distracting me. Do that. Do what? Well, okay, if you're in public situation, I did to be teaching. I think it's probably not a good idea to be distracting everybody with your bad habits. So it's interesting to find out that you have these things that you do that are really not very beneficial.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I've been dealing with some back issues for quite a while, and it would be really easy to be the poor me. I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. I'm not supposed to do this. I'm not. And I've started, just from your teachings, to think about all the people that have severe pain and problems. And I have physical therapists, and I have doctors, and I have a friend that does Reiki. I mean, all the things I have to help me, and so I started just to, the compassion to think of other people who don't have that support network and are in constant pain, and all of a sudden, just doing that, my pain is so much better.
Okay.
You know, just it puts it on a different scale, and minimizes. It doesn't take it away, but it minimizes it.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. That reminded me of the story. I think many of you may have heard it about His Holiness. His Holiness mentioned that one time, I think that was in Bodh Gaya, when His Holiness had some, I don't know whether it's a, what was the issue?
Stomach. Hmm? 2002.
Yeah. Yeah, a stomach problem. And so much, His Holiness, when he was driven to the hospital, there was so much pain. But then His Holiness says that then looking out of the window, His Holiness saw these poor beggars and all that, you know, in Bihar, there's a lot of those poor people. So after seeing those, and of course, naturally, His Holiness generated compassion, and then thinking of all the sentient beings' pain and suffering, so that didn't even realize how His Holiness got to the hospital. So that's very true. When we are only centered and focused on our suffering only, then, yeah, poor me, and then it magnifies. But when able to look at the bigger picture, then somehow our problem becomes so small. Yeah, that's very good. Thank you. Yes?
I wanted to share a story that the tour guide told us while we were in South Dakota. The Dominican warrior who led the fight against General Custer and won the battle at Little Big Horn was a warrior called Crazy Horse. And even though he was known to be a very ferocious warrior, his trademark was that he always thought before he spoke. So what struck me is that in every community, the great ones, the great leaders, practice some kind of mindfulness.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, he was also, he thought of the people first. He was a great leader, and I just finished listening to just that battle, and by family members, and he would often, countless times, he would lead the cavalry away from camp and so forth. And there was also some young people who were suicide attackers. They would give themselves to be sacrificed if they needed to. So the selflessness, and that it's like a bodhisattva ideals. And I know I've spent many years with the Lakota, and they have there's a sort of a very similar idea to the bodhisattva. They very similar. They think of how when they pray, they pray for the people. The suffering ones. It's not just their own kind, it's the whole of humankind.
So it's, I see.
Yeah, it's true, you know. Mm-hmm. The best of the many cultures are very similar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Anyone? Yes.
Since last week was holiday for coming here, I planned a project at my bathroom for the weekend. It didn't go well.
Mm.
The person whom I hired, he sent his car, and he said, "Oh, he's gonna do a very good job. I know him, but he messed up everything." He must have took so many hours for one thing to put a cabinet, and he struggled. And while he was doing this, he was taking the deep breath all the time, and
sighing.
I was worrying about him. That was because of the applying practice, I think so.
Mm.
So I was, oh my God, this guy may have some problem at home, or maybe he is suffering from some deep breath. Every now and then he takes the tears, so I talk to my husband, oh, maybe he has some problem. He must be something. But then he messed up everything. He took out things that he was not supposed to, put it back, and he, in the bathroom, there is a, he installed something, but has a crack, and he didn't tell us until he left. So then I thought, because of his condition, I was thinking more about him than my bathroom, mm-hmm. which was good, I think so. But then my family said, oh, you made this decision, you should go pick a little guy. You don't normally make a decision, but now you make the first decision, it was gone wrong. They were mad at me so much. Even though I wasn't so much concerned about the bathroom messing up, but then when they talked about how things got going wrong, so I feel bad, and I thought, oh, I should have, oh, this looks good. No, this looks doesn't, oh, this shouldn't be like this, oh, he should have. So I was trembling, I was so much said, oh, should I agree with my family that this was so bad, I had to fight with that person, I'm not going to pay, or should I think about this guy who was fixing it? If I complain, he might fire, he has a family. These all I thought about, if he may have family to feed. So maybe even with a loss for money, at least that person will use that money for his. Those all kept me thinking for 2-3 days. And then I think another way is, oh my God, see, the worldly things, even if it cracks, you think so much and your mantle is cracked. You don't take a time, or you don't attempt to fix it. That's why we are in samsara. Worldly, these material things, even if it looks, doesn't look good, it's an imperfect crack, you keep thinking about this for 3-4 days or even hour after hour, keep that memory. So then I realized that, oh, how ignorant we are, fixing the material things, which is for just for this life. But fixing your mind will get no way. So these all, because of the teaching, apply what you learn, that make me. And then next day also, my family, I tried to convince them, so they were finally agreeing. It's okay, it doesn't matter, it's okay. So then it all subsided. I was happy with that I struggled about the actual thing that I should be thinking, being a practitioner, supposed to be. So that was it. So I said, oh, forget all these projects. I should not
have worked for a whole week. So I am to be blamed. If I hadn't cancelled the class, you wouldn't be in that fix.
If it was not cancelled, I would not have
So that was a very interesting week.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone? Any more? Okay, if not, we will start today's discussion. So today we are going to talk about six preparatory, how do you pronounce that?
Preparatory
or preliminary practices. Oh, isn't it? In Tibetan it's called Jowe Che Tuk. I think most of you know about these practices. But I decided to include this because I feel that this is very important. So commonly we say that all these preparatory practices or those preliminary practices are not so important. The actual one is more important. But it is actually the other way around. So this practice, it is a practice that came from Lama Selimpa, Adisha's teacher. And then when Lama Adisha came to Tibet, and Lama Adisha passed it on, and then of course Lama Tsongkhapa elaborated in the Lamrim text. So why I say this is so important, it is, as you see, it's like the foundation.
So if we are going to build a house, the most important thing is the foundation. First of all, it has to be well planned. If you have not planned well, then once you reach the first floor or second floor, if you want to make changes, it's too late. And then secondly, it has to be really firm and stable. Many of the buildings, especially in India, we have cracks and building collapses and all this is because the foundation is not firm. They didn't do the foundation properly. Even back in monastery, of course, we don't rely on professional architects or engineers. We just design. I have designed some buildings as well. So then what happens is, after 1 year, it doesn't take even 1 year. As soon as it is finishing, the other side is already cracking. So this shows that the foundation is not done properly. So likewise, in our practice, we are aiming to achieve enlightenment. Nirvana, if not enlightenment. All this. But if your foundation is not well established, then no way you can build on it. So it is like preparing a special dish, let's give an example of Indian dish like biryani. First of all, you need to get the proper ingredients, whatever it is necessary. So there are different levels of different degrees of qualities. So for biryani, normally we use basmati rice. But if you use another rice, it is doable, but it won't be as good as using basmati rice. And then you need to prepare all this. If you're well prepared, follow the instructions and all that, then there is a likelihood that the result may be something that desirable consequences. Otherwise, it will not. So likewise, it is same. So that's why these six preliminary practices are like the foundations to our spiritual journey. Oh, I forgot to change this. Can you tell what these pictures are?
I see the one on the left.
Mm. So this one you can tell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then this one, can you tell what this is?
Is it recycling?
This is supposedly a bursted garbage bag. So we have we say that the time that we are in is called degenerative time. So during Buddha's time, Buddha gave one sermon, one teaching, and thousands will achieve realizations. And in our time, not just one sermon, days and days of teaching, still no realization. So we have a normally saying that in this kind of time, you say, Sungna tsik mesin, samna tyame go, gomna kyula meke. So what does it mean is, in this kind of degenerate time, when we try to memorize some Dharma words, we fail to do that, no matter how much we put. But it comes to other unimportant things, it really sticks in our memory. If you ask me some details from movies, I will clearly remember that. But if you ask me, what do you study in this thing, what is this thing, I won't remember. That's a sign of degenerated time. And then, first of all, we won't be able to memorize that well. And then when we try to sit down and do kind of contemplative meditation, nothing comes. Our mind keeps wandering. There is no real result. And then, of course, after contemplation, if we try to, now I want to do meditation, the realizations are very hard to come by. People do 3 years, 6 years, 10 years retreat. But realizations are hard to come by. So what this all shows is that we lack merit. We lack merit and we are filled with negativities, filled with obscurations. So look at here, the picture, the first picture. Because of the, in this window, you can see that it's fogged. Because of that, you cannot see clearly. Likewise, we have all these defilements, all these delusions and all the negativities. That's why we cannot see. When we try to do meditation, there is no realization. When we try to understand something, no. Sometimes we read the text how many times? At the end of it, like, what was that? We don't understand at all. It's all because it's being blocked or veiled. We need to unveil all that defilements. Only then we will be able to go beyond that obscuration. So that's one reason. Another reason is like this, the image is not that clear. It's because we don't have enough merits to really gain all this. It is like, you know, like a thin plastic bag and we're trying to put in all this thing. Because we don't have enough merit to really carry that kind of weight, we are unable to do that. And then, this is in relation to spiritual realizations. But even if we talk from the conventional terms, we all want happiness. We all are trying to avoid unhappiness and suffering. But this has to come from a cause and condition. And we well know that the only way to achieve happiness is through cultivating virtuous actions or merits. Only way to avoid experiencing suffering and pain is through avoiding creating negative actions, that is to purify. So there are two means to really achieve our goal, which is to be happy and not to experience suffering. So through this practice, these are not something that you know you have to do a lot of preparation, that you need to study for years. And all these are very common practices that we all can do. But it is very powerful in nature. So that's why it is so important. So we should not kind of ignore and kind of undermine the value of these practices by saying, oh, these are preliminary practices. I want to do the actual practices. That's not right. Without these preliminary practices well established, there will be no real gain. Because we, as mentioned, all these realizations and attainments will be obscured, will be prevented by all that our delusions and whatnot. So what are the six preparatory practices? So the first one is cleaning the room and arranging the representations of Buddha's body, speech, and mind. So in Tibetan, it's called Negang Chidur Chela Kusung Thugi Ten Tambas. So in Tibetan we use Negang, and Sangdun Rinpoche explains that there is a purpose in that. So Negang, there are two different things. Even though when in translation we said, cleaning your meditation room. But here in Tibetan, we use the two syllables here, ne kang. So ne literally means the place. Kang means room or the house. So what it is saying is that not only your meditation room, we also need to keep the surrounding of your room. So your room, if you say your prayer room is so clean, you keep all this, but the rest of the house is untidy, then that's not really logical, isn't it? So that's the first one. And then second one is obtaining offerings without deceit and arranging them beautifully. And then the third one is adopting the seven feature sitting position. This is about the meditation postures, how to sit properly while in meditation. And then taking refuge and generating bodhicitta mindset. This is about setting up one's motivation. And this is followed by visualizing the merit field. So in order to make all that offering and all that, we need to visualize the merit field. We need to invite the object of our offerings. And then the fifth one is offering the seven limb prayers and mandala, which is the seven limb prayer, which is the core practice of accumulating merit and self-purification. And finally, making requests to your gurus and buddhas and bodhisattvas to bless you to be able to continue on your spiritual practices. Do you need time to write this down? Okay.
Well, what did Nay mean again?
Sorry?
In the Nekan, what did Nay mean again?
Naikan. Nekang. Nekang. Ne means place.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, place. Kang means room or house. And chidor. Also, there are two syllables. Tibetan words have this, even though it sounds as one word, but there are two meanings attached to it. Like chidor. Chi is more like a sweeping, to sweep and clean. Dor means to throw away the dust, whatever you have, the dust that you have accumulated, and then yeah, you throw that chitors. So let's now talk a little bit in detail about the first preparatory practice, which is the sweeping and cleaning the meditation place. So generally, there are general benefits to general benefits to cleaning, keeping your house clean, whether you are doing meditation or not. So in sutra, there are five benefits listed. So the first one is your own mind becomes clear. That we can tell from our own experience. So if your room is clean and all this, you feel, you know, your mind feels clear and clean, that kind of. Whereas if your house is too messy, you don't even want to go in there. It kind of blocks your clarity of your mind. And then others' mind becomes clear. So when others visit, the environment is so clean. It also helps others to clear their mind, to have a clear mind. And then it pleases devas and protectors. So there is this belief that the devas who are attracted to spiritual practices, so they often visit wherever there are practitioners. And they will come and visit you, and they will actually facilitate your practices and help you in whatever way they can. So, but then devas are very prone to unclean things, dirty things. So if the place is not clean, they cannot come. They cannot visit you. So for that reason, it says that if you clean your house, keep your house clean, or especially your meditation place clean, then there is chances of all these devas and protectors visiting you, and then they will provide the necessary health or facilitate you in your spiritual journey. And then it says it creates karma to be handsome and attractive. So this one is mainly, it says it will help to help you in maintaining a pure ethic. So the physical, whatever you look, but if you have pure ethic, so that is the main beauty. That is like the main ornament. So even though you may not appear attractive to other people, but to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, if you have pure ethic, you appear attractive to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So that is one of the benefits. And then it says, creates karma to be reborn in a pure land. So these are five general benefits that is listed in sutras. And then normally when we talk about the first preliminary practice, this story is a must. There is this practice that all the lamas will tell the stories about this one. So in Tibetan it's called Lamchungpa or Lamtenden. So how many of you know about the story? Most of you would know. But still I will tell the story. So this was during Buddha's time. There was this family who had been losing child. Every child born in the house, it keeps dying. And then the family approached, their neighbor, an old lady, she said that next time, if a child is born, let me know. There is a way we can try something else. So when the child was born, so they called the lady, and the lady said, okay, send your maid with the child to go to a junction, a big junction, where all those practitioners pass by, and then make a request to them for the son to live long. And this maid took the baby and went there. She has heart in this, so she really went to a far in the main city junction where there's a lot of travelers passing by or passing through. So she waited there, and then all these different groups of practitioners passed, and then she made the request. Everybody blessed the child, and even Buddha and followers also, Buddhas and Buddha's entourage also passed by and blessed. And by evening, the boy was still alive. So he was brought back and he became Lamchenpa. He is known as Lamchenpa. Lamchenpa is, Lam is path or way. Chen is the big, because he was blessed at that city junction, that big junction. He was named Lamchenpa. And then they had another child, another son was born. This time, they again consulted the lady and she gave the same advice. But this time, unfortunately, that the maid turned out to be a lazy one. She didn't want to travel all the way to the city. So she just went to a nearby small junction there and waited and waited. And nobody really passed by. Of course, Buddha, being omniscient, saw this is happening, and Buddha went to that junction and blessed the child. So they grew up. Of course, his brother became a great scholar and, of course, achieved arhathood. But Lamchungpa, from young, he was so dull-witted. His intelligence is so low that he could not even memorize one word. So when he was at his age of education, he was sent to a teacher. And the teacher started with, what is the word? So they have this tradition. So before you, in Tibetan also we have this. When I was young, when we practice handwriting, we write Lawo, start with Lawo. That means it's more of a creating auspiciousness to easy learning. So these practices are also, at these schools, they start by saying, learning this word, Siddham. So when he was taught this Siddham, he couldn't memorize that. When he learns Si, he forgets the next syllable, Dham. When he learns Dham, he forgets the first syllable. So the teacher kind of gave up on him and then, said that I have other students to teach. I cannot afford to spend so much time on you. And then he was sent to another school. Same thing happened. In that school, the first they start with the Om Bum. Same thing happened. The first syllable, when as soon as he learned the first syllable, he forgets the second syllable. So he couldn't learn anything. And then by that time, his parents also died and he had nobody. And then he went to his brother, who is now a monk following Buddha. So he went to his brother with his clairvoyance. He checked whether he has any karma to be a monk, and some dharma karma, to practice dharma. And he saw that he has this karma to practice Dhamma. So he kept him as his student. And then he tried to teach. Same thing, no matter. He actually wanted to teach him one stanza. So four lines, no way. And then his brother contemplated through clairvoyance whether it is better to be rough with him or to be, gentle. And he found out that it will be better, more beneficial to be rough. So then he caught him from his neck and pulled out and then scolded him and left him at somewhere else. I said, you go, I don't want to waste my time and all this. Of course, these are all good intention. Then he was so sad and he was crying. Of course, Buddha, through omniscient mind, saw this is happening. And Buddha approached him and asked him, what happened? Why are you crying? So he said, my brother scolded me and all that. So Buddha said, it is better to be scolded by a great scholar than praised by stupid person. And then then Buddha said, why don't you come to me? I will teach you. He said, No, you have so many students, you have so many followers. I am such a dull-witted person, You won't be able to teach me anything. And then Buddha said, it is very good that you at least know that you are dull-witted. Many people don't realize that they think that they are so clever. So he said, this is very good. So he said, come with me and I will teach you. And Buddha tried to teach him, and of course, same thing. So then Buddha, being skillful, so he asked him to clean and wipe the monk's shoes. And then at the same time, to recite these two words. What is the word? Du bong tima bong. In English, how do you say that?
Abandon dirt, abandon stains.
Abandoned, yeah. Clean the dust, clean the stain, cast away dust, cast away stain, abandon dust, abandon, what was that? Stains, yeah. So he was asked to recite that, but of course he won't be able to memorize that too. But the monks were told that he's going to do this, but they have to say this whenever they enter and also pray for him. And then he cleaned the monk's shoes, wiped the shoes for some time. And then, yeah, he was able to memorize these two words. Du bong tima bong. Then Buddha said, okay, now enough. No need to clean the monks, no need to wipe the monks' shoes or footwear. You now go and clean the Gomba compound. So he was cleaning, but because of the power of karma or Buddha's power, so when you finish one side of the compound, the other compound is already filled with dust and leaves. And then he goes, so it's like whole day he was doing. But of course, there's no, he did with pure heart. And then as he was doing this for a while, then he started to contemplate on the word, abandon dust, yeah, dust. Clean dust, clean stain. What does that mean? Does it really mean the physical dust? So he was contemplating on this, and then suddenly there was a, what we call aha moment. Suddenly he realized that the abandoned dirt or the clean dust is not really referring to the actual dust, the physical dust. It is about the inner stains, the inner dust, which are like the three poisonous state of mind. All this, he realized that. And then he became, through that contemplation, he became arhat. So Buddha wanted to let people know about his realizations, his attainments. At the moment, everybody know him as the dull-witted person. And also during that time, the non-Buddhists, there's a lot of competition at that time. So they have been spreading, circulating this rumor to say that, oh, you know, the Buddha's community is nothing to be proud of. Look at him, you know. People like him, the dull-witted people, can also become part of Buddha's followers. So they have been saying all this. So because of that, Buddha wanted to show that he is not a dull-witted person anymore. So Buddha sent him to teach to a nunnery. In those days, they have these practices. Monks and nuns, we do honor. Every 15 days, we do this kind of confession session there. So before the actual one, so the whole night, there had to be a teaching given. So for the nuns, normally that they will send a monk to give teachings. So this time, Buddha asked Lam Chungpa to go over there. And then, of course, the nun community, there are also those nuns, you know, who always creates trouble. So they were so, they have been, you know, said, oh, this is such a bad thing, you know. They really look down on us, you know. Look at that. They're sending us this dull-witted person to teach us. We must do something so that they will never do this kind of, they will never treat us in this way. So what they did was, some of them, they stacked and made such a high throne for him to sit. And then the other three went to the town to announce, to publicize that this great teacher is coming. Of course, intention is to humiliate him. So we went to broadcast that, oh, we this time, you know, such a great teacher is coming. If you miss that, that is like a lifetime, you know, thing. You must come. And when the day came, it's like, so many people came, some out of really to listen to his Dharma teachings, but some out of, you know, curiosity. And when Lam Chungpa arrived at the teaching venue, when he saw that throne was so high, so he spent some time in his meditation to see whether this is out of reverence, respect, or was it out of mockery. Then he realized that it is actually to mock him. So, of course, he is already arhat. And then, yeah, some people saw it, some people didn't see it. He just stretched his hands, and then he was already on the throne. And then he displayed some miracles here and there, up in the air and all that. And then he said that, I'm going to teach on the one stanza for 7 days which I had. Now, I am going to teach on the stanza that I had difficulty memorizing for seven days. So on that one stanza, he taught for 7 days. So this is to show that how important, you know, this sweeping and all that. There is an aha moment. And we can explain from the karma point of view. Because of our heavy karma, we don't understand things. But when we are able to reduce that karma, and certainly we have aha moments. And I think we all have experience. Sometimes when you read the Dharma thing first time, you don't understand at all. Second time, same way. And then suddenly one day is like, wow, you understand so clearly. Then you say, oh, this is what it is talking about. So this happens. So the main thing here is to purify our negativities, purify the obscurations. So that one way to do is through simple act of sweeping. So how do we do that? So there is this, it all depends on our intention. When I was young, in our family, we have this practice. Every morning we sweep the house. Starting from the prayer room, we have to sweep. There's a lot of dust. But over here, of course, you don't have to sweep every day. But we do vacuum once a week, isn't it? Or maybe once 2 weeks, whatever it is. So the practice is, if you have a small prayer room, then irrespective of whether there is dirt or not, we should always sweep. So in the Lamrim text it says that, like His Holiness and Panchen Lamas, the lineage, so even though they have attendants, surrounded by attendants, but there are brooms, what you call used brooms, that we can actually see now, because these are all used by the Dalai Lamas to sweep. So in their own prayer room, they do practice this. They don't let just the attendants do all this. They personally engage in these practices. So these have really significance in that. So likewise, of course, some Lamrim texts said every session you do, you do bhavas. That's if only you have time. If not, at least we should do every day. And then when you really sweep that, the practice is to recite that two line, the two word, clean the dust, clean the stains. For when you do that, imagine or visualize your broom as the wisdom realizing emptiness. And then when you're sweeping, you imagine the dirt as all those afflictive emotions, ignorance, anger, hatred, whatever. And then you imagine that you are really sweeping that. So That's one way to do it. And then the intent, the actual motivation, is the motivation to achieve enlightenment for the sake of other sentient beings. So with that kind of bodhicitta motivation, and if you do that practice, really great. I think, if you really do that, that itself is good enough. All the other things, then when you think about it, there is possibility that, you know, you will have all these realizations because you are removing all the obstacles to have to gain all these insights. But when you are filled with all that obscurations, no matter how many hours you spend on meditation, nothing is going to gain from that. So that's one way we all can do. It is same with you. You don't have to sweep. You can use the vacuum cleaner. Nowadays, we are living in modern world. When you're vacuuming, it's same thing. Just the visualization is the key. So that's about the first preliminary practices. And it is 11 o'clock. So let's have tea first. And I forgot to mention to you that Lamjungpa is one of the 16 arhats. Mm. It's called Lamjungpa. Someone who is considered really dull with it is now up there in the 16th part of 16 arhats. So if we diligently clean our rooms, maybe, you know, we will be also in one of the... Yeah. Okay. So we have kind of covered the first part. Remember the first preparatory practices has two parts. The first part is sweeping and cleaning the meditation. Now the second part is arranging the altar, setting up the altar. So how do we do that? So in Tibet, in the Tibetan, it says, so it's setting up the arranging the representations of Buddha's body, speech, and mind. So what are those? And how do we set up? So first, yeah. So the you see that three thrones here. So in the middle we have a Buddha's image or statue to represent Buddha's body. And then to Buddha's right, we should set up a Buddha's scriptures, texts, as a representation of Buddha's speech. And then, remembered. And then, like Chuck, you are being mindful not to rock. I should be mindful not to touch this.
I've done pretty well.
You did well, you did well. Yeah. And then the, as a representation of Buddha's holy mind, we place a stupa. So this is how you set up your altar if there is no shelves. But if you are using shelves, then the scripture, the Buddha's speech, should go on top. So like this. This is my altar at my apartment. How pretty it is, isn't it? So any questions on this? So if you have the shelves, then you put, the main thing is put the text on the top, but some also put the Buddha's representation, Buddha's mind also on the top, but always the body is at the lower. Mm. And then if you are also having those let's say, the image of protectors, so it should always be at the lower than Buddha itself. So there is a kind of a level there. And in Lamrim, it's emphasized that even though, you know, we see our own altar every day, but we should always try to look at the altar, look at the face of Buddha. So there is this quote. It says that Deshi Tsung Kusu Tibala Tushin by Simji Tenayang Teta Rimji Sanje Chawa Tongs. So that means even if you look at Buddha's face with out of anger, out of envy, out of jealousy, whatever negative state of mind, even then it says that you will create a karma to see Buddha's image, to see millions of Buddhas. You create that karma. So this shows that, you know, if you look at Buddha's face with the devotion and reverence, of course, you can imagine how much merit we accumulate. So there's this story about Shariputra. So Shariputra, during Buddha's time, he is always there, one of the two main disciples. So he is always with Buddha. So that is said that the causes of that is that when one time in his earlier lifetime, when Shariputra, of course that time he was not Shariputra, so he ended up spending a night in a place where on the wall there was a picture of Buddhas. There was a Buddha's picture drawn on the wall. So when he saw that, he was so mesmerized, and he made prayers, oh, such a great being like this. May I be able to see that kind of image all the time. So he made that prayers. Because of that, it is said that when Buddha was during Buddha's time, he was all the time with Buddha and to able to see Buddha all the time. So the practice is that whenever you pass by your prayer room, always, you know, have a good look at your statues, even though you have seen that many times. And also when we set up statues or Buddha's image, sometimes we value statues, we set up statues or images based on its value as a material thing. So let's say if you have a statue that is made out of gold, we tend to treasure it more. Whereas when you have a statue that is made from clay, then we tend to, you know, put it aside. So the advice is that when we do that, that is, we are not really treating Buddha's image in a respectful way. We are just having this attitude of a material value, giving a material value. So no matter whether it is made from clay or whether it is old or not nice looking or whatever it is, we always have to view statues as actual Buddha and then give the same respect and reverence. So now we are going to the second part, a second practices, second preliminary practices, so which is obtaining offerings without deceit and arranging them beautifully. So in the second one also there are two parts. The first is about the offering itself, the way you acquire these offerings, and then how to arrange that. So it says arranging them beautifully. So the first one is obtaining offerings without deceit. So if you acquire something that something through deceit, and then if you make that as an offering, so that does not really serve the purpose. Because puja or offering, we call Tibetan, we call it chupa. In English, it's translated as offering, but I think in Sanskrit it's called puja. So puja literally means to please. So we are making these offerings to please Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. But if you have acquired that through cunning ways, through harming others, through deceitful means, then there is no reason for Buddha and Bodhisattvas to be pleased. They would rather you don't do that. So that's why it is important that whatever we are offering, it is earned properly through proper means. So in Lamrim, it outlines five kinds of wrong means. So here, when we talk about obtaining offering without deceit, there are two kinds. First is the material itself, and then the second is the wrong intention. So first we will go through the five wrong means. So these are, in Lamrim and all this, these are more likely to occur to Odin people, because Odin people, or monks and nuns, they rely on others' sponsorship, others' help. But it is not impossible to happen to lay people as well. But here for lay people, it is more about how you earn your living. Whether you earn your living through, you know, harming others, exploiting others, some of the big giant companies, they really exploit their workers. They really try to pay them as low as possible and make as much profit as possible. So these kind of money that you acquired, and if you make that as offering, so we don't know whether it is through right means or not. And then sometimes deceiving people, conning people, cheating people. These are very common things that happens. And all kinds of scams are, we know about all these kinds of scams where people loot money from other people. So these are considered as wrong means. So that kind of offering, if you make to Buddhas, then yeah, it is not a proper offering. So the first one, it is called the using flattery and devious speech. So sometimes in order to get things, we will say all kinds of things just to please the person, even though you know that that is not true, but you will say it anyway because you are hoping to get something from that person. But of course, you can praise the person without that kind of intention. If you use flattery words to a person without that kind of intention, you know, hoping to get something in return, if it is a really honest praise, then it is okay. But if you do that in order to get something, so if you are able to get something through that kind of means, then that is considered acquiring through wrong means. And then giving something small in hope of receiving something large in return. I don't need to explain this. Sometimes, you know, we give something small, we make a gift. Our intention is all the time to get something bigger in return. So that kind of material or whatever it is that we get, and if we make offerings, these are also improper. Then this is insinuation, where we don't say it directly, but we just kind of hint. Or someone gave me, let's say if I want a pair of shoes, instead of asking the person, could you please, you know, buy me a pair of shoes, but instead you say, oh, you know, last time Brian bought me a nice pair of shoes. It was so useful. Now it is, you know, already, you know, torn, you know. I may need another one. But you are hinting the person to buy one for you. So that kind of insinuation, the way, you know, you imply that, you know, you want the person to buy things, you want the person to give to you. So that is also considered wrong means. And then using coercion, using kind of power that sometimes, you know, they through legal means or whatever it is, you just take away things from other people. And I think it is not no harm in sharing. And I had one of those experience. My mother bought a place, and then we bought from somebody who the actual owner, we bought from the actual owner, but he was given by his relatives. But when it comes to the transferring the titles, that person, even though it's a Tibetan, yeah, first asked for 700,000 just to transfer them. We have paid everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But in the end, we ended up paying 200,000 just for them to sign the paper. That person has given the property to his sister, and we bought from him. But that time they didn't do the title. So we still have to go to them to give us the title. And we ended up paying 200,000. And he made that offering to His Holiness Long Life Puja. I was like, is it really a good offering or not? Yeah. So this kind of thing. Yeah, this happens in Tibetan community, yeah, even though we talk about karma and all that. They do. Hmm. Then this one, using deceptive behavior. So this is normally, you know, your behavior is not according to Dharma. You are really naughty and all this. But then in front of people, when you are expecting a big donor or sponsor, then you really pretend you are a great practitioner, all this. So that through that one, you, of course, your intention is to get something from that person, and then you pretend that you are a great practitioner. But of course, the other intention is that, you know, even though you are generally not well behaved, but when you go out and if you try to behave well with the intention that, oh, if I don't behave well, then it will defame the monastic community. So with that kind of intention, and if you have this kind of deceptive behavior, it is acceptable because your intention is not to gain something from the other person. It is mainly for the sake of the whole community. So here what we are talking about is just for your own gain. If I portray as a good practitioner and then, you know, oh, they may sponsor me, they may give me money, that kind of thing. So these are the means. If we earn money or material things that we earn through these means, and if we make offerings, so that is considered not proper offerings. So this is about the material that we offer. So now it is about the intention. Wrong intention. So this is very common. It is very, we are very prone to this. Even we make offerings here, even in your house, we do it with, let's say if you have a visitor coming there, and then you set up your altar so nicely with all that offering on the table. So what was your intention? Was it really to make an offering to Buddhas, or is it because you want to look what you call nice in the eyes of your visitors? This is very common. So that's why it is very important that we have to constantly check our intention when we do all these practices. I have mentioned earlier that in Tibetan community we have these practices of offering meals and money offerings to big monasteries. So it involves making offerings to thousands of monks. It is a lot of money involved there. But if your intention is really to achieve enlightenment or to achieve nirvana or other good virtues motivation, then it is okay. But it is out of competition, out to seek praise. That wow, this family so generous, you know. Wow, they offered this and that. Then yeah, it's just a waste. So this is very important. We do all these practices, but then because of our intention, we kind of stain that. We kind of waste all that effort and energy and the material, whatever it is. So I think the very common story is about the Ben Gongge story. So Ben Gongge was expecting one of his sponsors. So he was the sponsor told them that, oh, we will be visiting you tomorrow. So this morning, yeah, he set up a nice altar, did all that, and then he sat down. And then he felt that today feels a bit something different. It looks cleaner, and then he looked at it, and then he realized that his intention was corrupted. He did all this just because they are coming, and he wanted to be seen a great practitioner, you know, good practitioner, doing all this. And then, yeah, he went out, took a handful of ashes and sprayed on it, threw on it. And then at the same time, another lama who has clairvoyance, who saw that and said that that was the best offering. The best offering was of the Ben Gongge, because he was able to slap this worldly concern. And then there was another story of Ben Gongge. So Ben Gongge, he joined monastery, and he was not really senior. So he, in monastery, you have to sit according to your seniority. So he was like towards the end of the row. And then in monastery, they serve curd yogurt, yeah, plain yogurt. And he was looking, his seating is here, and he can see all that rows of monks. And whoever is serving, they were serving so generously that is that, oh, if you serve it that way, you know, by the time you come to my row, there will be no more left. So he was so worried. And then he suddenly realized that his intention is this corrupt motivation. And then when the actual server came to his turn, he put his bowl upside down and said that, he has already eaten, no need. So this is to show that, you know, all the time we have to check our motivation. If we're able to do that, then it will be worth. Yes, please.
I'm sitting here thinking that if I had dozed off for a minute and lost track of what we were talking about, and all of a sudden woke up, I'd say, oh, Rinpoche is talking about the college admission scandal. All the people who gave money so the kids could go to school. And it's really, every one of those things is, they've all violated all of those things by making those offers and just for the intention of having, bribing people and say, you know, maybe building buildings and things like that, they get special treatment. Mm. Their intention is always, you know, very personal.
So now the common practice. So now we talked about the materials that we offer, and we also talked about the intention. So now what can we do? What kind of practices are available, common practices? So this is a very common practice. I think you have seen in many of the gombas or individual houses. They have this, what is called the 8 sets of offering. So you have 2 waters, followed by flower, incense, light, and then another water, perfume, supposed to be perfume, and then you have the food, and then the music. So this is adopted according to the Indian tradition. So those days when in India, when you have a visitor, those days, of course, there are no cars. So people normally walk. And then India being hot. So when you have a guest, so the first thing what they will do is they will give you a drinking water because you are so thirsty from traveling. And then because no shoes, so they will give you water to wash your feet. And then they will give you flowers. Normally, when you visit India, you will say they were garland of flowers, you know, you will receive that. And then the incense. And then also you see sometimes the Indian tradition, they have this fire and go around, I don't know how many times. So these are the Indian practices. Then once you are in the house, and then they will serve you food. And after that, there's a bit of entertainment. So that is the Indian culture or the tradition at that time. So according to that, so we also offer these 8 sets. So this one, you can have a, you can leave flower, of course, you can offer every day, or you can buy fake flowers and leave it there. Then incense also you can leave there, but you can every day you can light a new lamp, and then the first two and this water you can change if you want to, but most of the time people have this bottled water there, but actual practice is this one. The water bowl offerings. How many of you do water bowl practice? Okay, very good, very good. So water bowl offering practice is, I think it must have started, I don't know, it must have started from Adisha's time in Tibet, because when Adisha first visited Tibet, and after tasting the Tibet water of Tibet, which is all from mountain, it is really clean and tasty and all that. So Adisha said that, oh, you Tibetans are so lucky. You have this kind of quality water. So just doing this offering is good enough. You don't need to do many offerings. This itself is beneficial. Of course, Tibetan water, they are in Lamrim, they talk about the 8 benefits. So anyway, I think that's how it came about, water bowl practices. One reason is that water in Tibet during those times, nobody owns. No ownership to water. It's 24 hours running. Even when I was young in Bhutan, we have 24 hours of big water running there. There is no tap or anything. It's just 24 hours running. And nobody can claim that it is my water. Yeah. So it's free. So because it is free and also it is plentiful, there is no sense of, miserliness. If we were to offer a bottle of orange juice every day, we will be like, oh, how long can I go? You know, there is, even if you're able to do that, there is a little bit of stinginess. It won't be pure. But water, nobody feels, you know, stingy about water. Those days, nowadays you have to pay water bills, so I don't know. Yeah. Ooh. Mm. Yeah, so that is the reason. Yes, please.
Rinpoche, when you fill water bowls, what do you say?
Normally we say Om Ahum.
Okay.
To bless okay. So the water bowls, you can do 7 sets, You can do 100 sets, it's up to you. And there are practitioners who just do the water bowl practices. From the morning, they will have hundreds of water bowl, and an hour later, they will just redo and continue doing that days and days and months and years. That's their main practice. So we may not be able to do that kind of 100 times, but it is good if you have time just to do maybe 7 sets or 7 balls, if that's considered one set. Or you're too busy, you can just make one offering. One ball and then make offering. That is also good enough. Yeah, it is all your intention. So I'm sure most of you know how to do water balls. But in case, I have this clip. It is actually His Holiness is teaching how to do water balls. But there is no English translation, but from the monk doing all this, you can guess what His Holiness is saying. So let's see this. So His Holiness was saying that he noticed that some people, when they do water bowl offering, instead of having something, some water in each bowls, they are just putting that empty. So he said, that is not right. You should always have something in there. And there was this story that when Milarepa, when he first went to see Lama Marpa, he offered a ball. It's an empty ball. So Marpa realized, that was inauspicious and created something negative. So Marpa said, why don't you just take this back and make a lamb butter offering. So because of that, it is said that Milarepa had to struggle for his meals. Eventually, Milarepa survived on that beetle, is it? Nettle soup, because nobody was coming to offer him. So that creates inauspiciousness. So that's why it is important that when you place the balls, always have a little bit of water in each of the water balls. Oops.
Ding tamatama de la loya, or no woman in March, Sushiro Matasha, Mashia, and Churu, then Yamanga, the Tishus, Mashia, Churu, 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 Churu,
The rest you understood? Yeah, so that's the first thing is make sure that you have water in each bowl, and then when you set up, is place the each bowl not too close but not too apart. It's normally said that it's the size of a grain. And then when you pour with respect, in a respectful way, as if you are serving a king or somebody important. So if we are to serve His Holiness a cup of tea, the way we pour, we will be very careful, we will be so respectful. So we are actually making offering to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So we should be more careful, more respectful. So when you pour water, so it says in the shape of a grain. So grain normally, the two ends are pointy, and then the middle part is thick. So the first one is start with a small, and then it increases, and at the end, then it again becomes smaller. So that's the way to make waterfall offerings. And one of the reasons that cleaning of the house is that we are inviting Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in our prayer room. So if we are expecting a special guest, it doesn't have to be a special guest. If we are inviting our friends over, from morning we will be busy vacuuming and setting up and all that, to make the place look nice. If we do that for our just ordinary friends, why wouldn't we do to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas? So that's about the first two preliminary practices. And the third one, we will continue in July. I purposely leave it here to create auspiciousness to continue. Yeah. And don't forget that next week we are having a potluck. And please invite and bring along your family members. It is like a, you know, get together, family and, you know, the cajoling members get together. We can treat this as get together and bring along your friends or whoever wants to come. Yeah. We will have a first part, first 1 hour, we will have a bit of discussion, kind of revision. Then I'm going to give you big assignments. We will go through the assignments, yeah. And then, yeah, you get 1 month spring. Is it spring break or is it summer break now?
Summer break.
Okay, summer break, summer break. Yeah, summer break. Okay, that's about it.
We should say the dedication prayer is first the short mandala offering on page 4, and then continue with the concluding prayers.
Yes. Medo dama rera linje nyende gembande sanje shinlo medem bewai drogwe namda jenla chebara esho tamba jenamji chugu kala kenze tenje ne chedara tsambe dujan zema zage juje javabdo se Rana mandala ganaya daya me Rinpoche maje panamache jo se Keba nyamba meba yang kone kondo pewara sho Rabden jin namga tele choju geba dan Losan tenbe tume sasum jin Jove me se dado ne juro che Korve shengam su pendan dewa malu jungwe ne Chenre sewan tenzin jazu Shabe se de bado ten juro che Chedara kemba tanga kundo sambu teya tejin Teda kunjin jesu talon jin Gyawa deda rabdo ngo Hebe gyawa tamji gi ngowa kala chodo ngaba Taji kewe zawan digun jang Sambu chuji rabdo ngowa iki
So when you vacuum, don't forget to say the two words, du pong tima pong. Then visualize your vacuum cleaner as the wisdom realizing emptiness.